Welcome to the Yo 11 Podcast. Yo 11 Podcast. Say it with me. Yo 11 Podcast. We're not doing the minutes thing anymore. Anyways, today's episode, Turbulence and Airline Travel Tips. Keep your f***ing seatbelt on. It's episode 90, season 3 of the Yo 11 Podcast. Michael Traeger is a casino and travel loyalty expert who also helps people turn their travel dreams into reality. And he's also your host. Give it up, everybody, for Michael Traeger. Changed it up just a bit. Sorry, man.
It's okay. Just back from Boston right now. But, you know, we need to keep the Yo 11 podcast, a Zorkcast production, going.
That's right. I got to add that into my thingy. So I remember to say.
A Zorkcast production. You know what we're going to do, though? There's going to be a Zorkcast at least twice a month. I told you that. I have to add that to the list of many things that Michael desires to do.
That's right.
And you know what I'm thinking of right now? Dice. Look at that. Oh, I didn't even look, and I pulled up a sort of an 11. Yes, that is an 11 with a one, because I'm thinking of dice because I'm going to Vegas.
That's right. That's right. You're coming out to the city, coming out to
I'm coming out to the town, Holy Land, to the town, to your town.
Yep.
Your town.
We're going to.
Your amazing town.
We're going to plan to do some things.
I plan to do some things that you do in Vegas. And it's also like the best trip because it's mostly a me trip, as well as the fact that I didn't think it was happening. And then I decided for it to happen because life is getting in the way this summer. And I know I'm not going to be able to have a Vegas trip in June when I regularly do it for my birthday. And I have a conference in September. So that's already booked. So that's pretty good. And then we have Zorkfest in November. So that's going to probably round out my Vegas this year. It's going to be Memorial Day, September. September is going to be like over a week, though. And Zorkfest is going to be a week. So that's pretty good trip. I like these longer Vegas trips. I like these longer Vegas trips that are a week because it gives me like more time. I just think it's I'd rather have longer trips than multiple shorter trips, at least at this point in my life, because it just seems to be better that way. And that's it. And maybe I'll wind up in Atlantic City. I was in Atlantic City in January, so I don't know what's going to happen. We'll have to see.
All right. We'll have to see. Well, until then, let's get started with the news and views. In just 6 months, Formula One will be back in Las Vegas. But before then, local businesses are taking a stand. One local business owner is suing F1 and Clark County over claims of lost profits, and others are preparing to follow suit. He's leading all of us to do the same thing, said Magdy Amer, the former owner of Tex-Mex Tequila Bar and Grill on Las Vegas Boulevard and Harmon Avenue. After F1-related construction started for last year's Grand Prix in April, business went downhill quick. Tex-Mex used to bring in $18,000 to $20,000 daily, Amer said. By the time we left, we would be lucky if we brought in $1,500. Amer operated the bar and grill for 6 years and fully shut down in November. Now, the old Tex-Mex building is being demolished. He's not the only business owner claiming financial loss from F1. At least seven businesses claim millions in lost profits from construction last year. The owner of Ellis Island is the first to sue F1 and the county, hoping to make back what they claim they lost. The 2024 F1 Las Vegas Grand Prix is expected to take over at Las Vegas from November 21st to 23rd. Construction is expected to last 3 months for this year's event. Until then, the county still needs to meet with Formula One about a special use permit to have the race. And that's going to do it for the news. And now for the views. Michael, what are your thoughts?
This is a really tough one because I'm so wondering how you can fix this problem of the businesses that are impacted by F1. And don't get me wrong, I'm not an F1 hater. I mean, I think F1 is actually good for Las Vegas, you know, even though I believe it brings some complications. But I do believe that you can't impact businesses negatively, you know, with construction or other things during F1. So you need to solve that problem. I mean, how do you fix this problem? Do you just pay those businesses for loss of business, figuring that there's some level of collateral damage? I mean, I don't really know. Like, Malvestro, have you thought about that? Like, how do you solve it? You know, I understand the problem, but how do you, like, F1's still going on and going to be going on. Maybe there's less construction this year. It won't be as impactful, but it probably will still have some impact on some of these businesses.
I don't think there really is a way to solve it. I mean, we have another 9 years of this. It's not going to be going anywhere. So, one of the things that they're proposing is that to put an upfront fund for some of these businesses that will be affected to help them stay in business. But I'm not really sure if that's going to happen or not. But that's one of the things that they're looking at right now.
Yeah, it's really a tough one, you know, and it's sort of there are things that happen with businesses where, you know, something else has an impact on your business and it sort of sucks. But I think this is such a major impact. Like, for example, if you run a taco shop and someone opens a taco shop across the street, right, which is totally legal, that would impact your business. I also do sort of wonder, you know, businesses do have insurance for disruptions. You know, if there's something that disrupts your business or causes you not to be able to open your business or operate your business, and that's a pretty cut and dry insurance thing. I don't know a lot about insurance, but I wonder if people have been able to make claims on their insurance for business disruption, if they have something on their insurance about business disruption, or is that a tough one because the business was still operating? So it wasn't like you couldn't get in the taco shop or couldn't get in Ellis Island. It just was severely impacting the amount of business you have. So I'm sort of curious about that because I just have to guess that people have something in their insurance policies to protect them from more than just like the entire business burning down or something like that, but for something that, you know, disrupts the business. So I'm curious, and I'm sure somebody listening knows a lot more than me. So tell us what you think. What's the compromise? What is the solution?
If only we were tight with Jake from State Farm, he would tell us exactly what needs to be done.
Or that chaos guy from that other insurance commercial. I'm just chaos. Isn't that what he's called? Isn't it? I forget.
Mayhem. It's mayhem.
Mayhem. Okay. Chaos. Mayhem. This is.
That's my favorite one.
Or the one with the duck.
Oh, yeah. Affleck. Yeah. Affleck. The duck was voiced by Gilbert Gottfried. I don't know if you knew that, but
we've just given a multitude of free insurance advertising. So that's everybody. We're covering everybody. So it's interesting. I do think this is a dilemma. I think it is a dilemma that needs to be solved. I believe it should be solved in a fair and equitable way. We know F1 is not going away. We know the city is overall pretty positive about it. I'm going to say I'm more positive about it than negative about it. I think Movestro might be a little more negative about it.
I just think that the city needs to take a more progressive approach. Other insurance company. All right.
Oh man, more progressive. Okay, you know what? Though progressive is one of those words that I have. It's trouble to figure out exactly what progressive means, right? Like,
it's moving forward, something like that. I mean, that's pretty much the general gist of it.
General.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll see if it's
so many insurance puns. What the hell are
you? Yeah, doing? I know. It's just like this has turned into an entire insurance fund, which is only probably entertaining us. So yeah.
We apologize to our viewers. Please send all complaints to complaints@travelzork.com.
That email is guaranteed to bounce.
Exactly.
But if you ever do want to email us, a very good point. You can email us at info@travelzork. No, it's tips@travelzork.com. I think info also works, but tips@travelzork.com. I think we've mentioned that before.
All right. That being said, let's get on with the tease.
Okay, so we have the tease. The tease today is basically, you know, the title of our episode about, you know, this, when the subject of the Singapore Airlines jet from London to Singapore this morning, when the news came out about the horrible turbulence that this flight hit, I thought that it would be a really great time to talk about some random tips when flying. And for those not aware, there was a major incidence of turbulence. Turbulence occurs when a plane flies through clashing bodies of air moving at wildly different speeds. With light and moderate turbulence, passengers might feel a strain against their seatbelt, and unsecured items could move around the cabin. But in severe cases, turbulence can throw passengers around the cabin, causing severe injuries and occasionally death. This flight likely encountered rapidly developing thunderstorms, and basically that was under over Myanmar at approximately 7:49 a.m. UTC, which would have been about 3:49 Eastern time. This lines up with the statement from the airline stating that the plane encountered sudden severe turbulence over the Irrawaddy Basin, which is a river, at 37,000 feet, about 10 hours after departure. Remember, that flight to Singapore is really long. I think it's 16. Flight Radar 24 also said in a blog post that according to the data at that time, the flight encountered a rapid change in vertical rate consistent with sudden turbulence event. The data showed that the flight changing course about 14 minutes later, and the pilot declared a medical emergency and immediately diverted the aircraft to Bangkok. Flight Radar 24 data shows the flight, which was cruising, suddenly dipping, then rapidly climbing a few hundred feet before dipping and climbing again, and then finally setting back at its cruising altitude. The entire disruption took about 90 seconds. That's really important to remember. These are short, but huge. And according to data, it resulted in dozens of injuries, including a fatality. There were some updates. There was one gentleman, unfortunately, that passed away. They said it might have been because he suffered a heart condition. And that the update, the most recent update, is that 71 people had been injured, including citizens from Malaysia, United Kingdom, New Zealand, Spain, and the United States and Ireland. It also said that 6 people were severely injured, and 7 people were critically injured. And that's actually, they had said 7 earlier, and then they updated that a little bit. And several passengers had sustained broken arms, but that the majority of the injuries were cuts and bruises. Why does all of this happen? Very simply, you're literally thrown out of your seat, and like your head can hit the ceiling. I mean, this is intense, abrupt, you know, motion, and, you know, this turbulence, and you would think something like that couldn't happen, but it is. And it's very rare. It's very intense, but it's also a great reason why you never, there are a couple of things. I mean, one is, this is why you leave your seatbelt on. Of course, there's moments when you can't have your seatbelt on, like when you get up to go to the lavatory. But of course, this is the main reason why you always have to keep your seatbelt on. This is also another little side note, it's a great reason not to have a child under 2 years old as a lap child, because it's much, much safer to have a child with their own seat in an approved car seat. I understand it's not perfect. I understand that children will not always stay in a car seat, you know, approved car seat and or a bassinet or something like that. But, you know, it's better even if it's only a large part of the time. It is very dangerous to have a child in your lap, even though it is allowed by airlines for children up to 2 years old, because unfortunately, if you ever hit severe turbulence like this or in other types of, you know, situations where you drop altitude rapidly, the child can become a projectile. So it's one of those things. Once again, it's rare, but it's something to think about. Anyway, I created a random tips when flying chart, which we are going to throw up. And these are just some of my tips for people when they fly. Even though flying is super safe and much safer than driving, there are a couple of things that you should be aware of and always be thinking of. One is, keep your shoes on during takeoff. Takeoff is a very critical time. If there is a rare issue, it is good to have your shoes on for the obvious reason. Keep your wallet, which should be a small wallet, with identification, and also, if applicable, separately, your passport in your front pocket. if there happens to be an evacuation, your wallet and ID needs to be on you. This saves time. You definitely don't want it in an overhead bin or tucked away somewhere, because if you need to evacuate, it's nice to have your ID and passport on you. Strong suggestion is always wear pants with pockets, and you should be able to evacuate with just your pants on, watch and phone, and nothing else. And you should be able to do that pretty much so immediately. You need to keep your seatbelt on all the time, sitting, resting, eating. You never know when there's going to be turbulence. You can't predict it. The only way to be safe is to always wear your seatbelt when you are at your seat. No excuses. When you board, you need to count the rows to the exits from your seat, the rows in front and behind. You need to know how far away those exits are. In case of an emergency, there might be smoke, and you need to know how many rows to crawl to for the exit. Even though there is lighting, it's good to know how many rows you have to go to or where you're aiming to get to for an exit. It's a good idea to put that in a notepad on your phone, for example, just so you remember 3 rows forward is an exit, 8 rows back. Just a good thing to always be aware of, situational awareness when you get on a plane. And if evacuating, always leave all bags and belongings. Never try to bring your bags, purses, or luggage. It is a hazard. It slows down evacuation. There are many instances where the plane needs to be evacuated as quickly as possible, and it's really, really dangerous. You know what? Don't worry about your stuff. Just worry about getting off the plane and evacuating safely. You also don't want to slow other people down. And when you go, when you evacuate on the luggage chutes, that all of those items that you would bring with you would become a hazard. Once again, this is why you've got your wallet and your passport in your front pocket and you get out right away. And as Movestro so eloquently said, keep your fucking seatbelt on.
Nicely put. And also remember that if you're flying and the masks come down, be sure to fasten your mask first before trying to assist somebody else.
Yes, that's yes. True.
And if your life vest does not inflate, there's a little tube that you could just blow into to give yourself cardiac arrest before you actually hit the water. You can do that as well.
Oh, Movestro. What else is yes, there? I didn't cover those. I wanted to cover the things. I do think keeping your ID on you and being aware of where exits are, keeping your shoes on at takeoff, those kind of things is just really, really important. Because I totally understand if you need to evacuate a plane, you would like to like have your wallet and your passport on you. You wouldn't want them to be up in an overhead bin where you have to look for them or right. Something like that. And it might be a little bit uncomfortable to keep your wallet and your passport, you know, in your pants. But you know what? It shouldn't be. You find yourself a small wallet, or you know, or have a small wallet that you keep on you that are your most critical things, like, you know, a driver's license and 1 or 2 credit cards. And you can tuck away all your other wallets of the 100 credit cards that you have and pictures of your dog and things like that.
I like the tip that you mentioned as far as counting the number of rows in front of you and in back of you for the exit. I never thought of that one before. That's a good one. I like that one.
Well, it is, because if you think you're in an emergency and all of a sudden there's smoke, yes, there's escape path lighting, but it's good to say to yourself, okay, I know it's only 8 rows back. So if I have to crawl to get to the exit for some reason, I sort of know how many seats to count. Like I know like how I'm getting, like how far I have to go. Like, oh my God, how much further do I have to go? Where is the exit? You know? So I've always thought that that's a really, you know, a really good idea. And many people have said that before, but they don't say it often enough. And that's what we, you know, and that's what our travel tips were. And hopefully you will never have to run into a situation like this ever in your life, which is fine because flying on airplanes is very, very safe. But you know what? It's always good to be aware. Always good to have some tips.
Indeed. Speaking of tips, today we put out an article about the popular steakhouses on the Strip, the finest steakhouses on the Strip. And we would like to know what your tips are for the finest steakhouses. What's your favorite steakhouse? Be sure to check out our article on travelzork.com and hit us up on social media. If you could comment right underneath that particular article in social media, that'll make it a lot easier to find. But yeah, do check it out. What's your favorite one, Michael? What's your favorite steakhouse on the Strip?
My favorite steakhouse on the Strip. I knew you were going to ask that.
That was a hard decision, ain't it? You're just like, oh man, there's so many to choose from.
You know, it's tough. You know, I really like SW, but SW has not always been perfect to me. I will tell you, I'm going to answer the question with a question. If it's not limited to Las Vegas, but it is limited to casinos, I will say Rare at Encore Boston Harbor is one of my favorite steakhouses. I thought Rare was really, really good. I'm trying to think, though. I'm not. Well, I've told you this. Contrary to popular opinion or thoughts, I am not really that much of a steakhouse person. Even though I've eaten at a lot of steakhouses, I don't like mine steak, but it's not one of my favorite foods. So I have to think about that a couple of times. I do want to go to a steakhouse. The ones that I haven't tried yet are, I haven't tried anything at Fountain Blue yet. I do want to try the two steakhouses there, including the Poppy Steak. I have not tried Barry's at Barry's Prime. What is that called? At Circa. And I'm very curious about that steakhouse.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few I have not tried. There are quite a few I have. And I haven't tried Peter Luger yet. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go to Peter Luger. I have Peter Luger on my list. And I have a reservation penciled in for this upcoming trip. So that is sort of interesting. What's your favorite steakhouse? Maybe you could answer a question directly, unlike me.
Yeah, it would be Gallagher Steakhouse at the New York, New York.
Really?
Yep.
My dad loves Gallagher's in New York, like the Gallagher's.
Yeah, that's where it started. It started over there in New York. They perfected the New York strip slice of steak. That's why it's derived from over there. They did the dry aging technique, and all those things are done over at the location at the New York, New York out here. They renovated recently. The menu is a little bit different than it was, but they're still serving great steaks. So there's that. Before we get go ahead.
SW and Peter Luger are on my list. So we'll see. I mean, at least for this trip. I don't know if that's going to happen. Just because it's on the list doesn't mean it's going
to
happen.
I mean, you might just want to go to, Pappy Steak and have them, bring out that box with the steak in it and the steam and the branding and the clapping of the hands and the celebrating.
You know what? I'm glad that makes people happy. Because if it makes them happy, that's fine. Every time I have gone into the foray of something bougie, and I know that's I call that an entertainment steak. But the most bougie steak
entertainment steak.
But the most bougie steak I ever had was at Rare at Encore Boston Harbor, and I totally regretted getting it. And it's only because the waiter did such a good job telling me about it, but it basically was a steak in which the cow had a very limited diet, which was basically just olives. You can't make this up. So basically, it was just an olive-fed cow in Italy somewhere, I think. I mean, the story was amazing. Like, I wish I had a recording of it. And it was super small, or it was, like, super expensive. So I didn't get a very large one. It must have been, like, 4 ounces. And I really wish I had just gotten a ribeye. And that taught me a lesson right there. I am never doing any of this like crazy, like, oh my God, can I tell you about our special tonight? Our special steak. So I'm just sticking with the ribeyes. That's what I'm sticking with. And I like ribeyes.
Yeah. I feel bad for the cow. I think just having a diet of nothing but olives. I'm thinking that when they came to butcher her, she was like, thank God, put me out of my freaking misery already. If I eat one more freaking olive, man, I don't know what I'm going to do.
that's it. So that's all I got for you on steak. But yes, really just give me a good, ooh, the other place I love. And my very good friend Marilyn also loves it too, is Vic and Anthony's at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City. And there's actually a Vic and Anthony's at the Golden Nugget in Vegas too. And I've eaten there too, but there's something about the Vic and Anthony's at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City that is so good. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe it's the company. I have no idea. And that's it. That's all I got for you on steak tonight. I will ponder my favorite steakhouse.
Well, maybe it's possible because it's Atlantic City. It's right by the ocean. That cow was raised, on just like a diet of seafood and nothing else. And maybe That's what gets it.
Oh, maybe that's it. You know what I really want to ponder is what's the best hot dog in Las Vegas? And that's all. That's all I got you for today. So let's ponder that one a little bit.
All right. Before we get going, is there anything you want to share? Any thoughts or anything?
No, I think I shared enough.
All righty then. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Luxury travel booking, Travel Zork Travel. Visit us at travelzork.travel to plan your next amazing vacation. And please join the conversation on social media. You can find us easily. All social platforms are at Travel Zork. We'll see you next time.